Truly is an honor and a pleasure for us to be together this morning. So thankful to God for this new day and opportunity that He's blessed us with. Good to see so many this morning on a holiday weekend. We have a number of our folks traveling, but as Mark mentioned, we have a number of visitors with us today. You are our very honored welcome guests, and we're thankful that you have sought us out while you are on your vacation. So that's an encouragement to us. We appreciate that so very, very much. I want to just mention a couple of things before we get started this morning. And if you will, be turning to Romans chapter 7 and put your marker there. We'll be studying from that passage together this morning. But I do want to make mention of just a few things before we get started. Big week this week for some of our folks. In particular, we rejoiced with Ben and Kara this week. Wedding day on Saturday, I believe, the 8th, and so they'll be heading to Kentucky, is my understanding, for the wedding. We rejoice with those guys. They have certainly been a blessing to us, and so we want to rejoice with them. Hope and pray everything goes well this week, and I think we'll rejoice with them in some formal way when they get back, but sure appreciate them and wish them well in their marriage. As well, I want to just welcome some folks in particular, especially that are special to me. I'm thankful to have my parents here with us this morning. Dad's going to be filling in tonight, preaching for one that was not able to do that. And so Dad will be speaking tonight. Invite you to come back for that. Also special to me is to have my nephew for the first time. In worship services, Ptolemy Reeves is here with us. We're thankful to have their whole family with us for the first time this morning. And then I saw a good friend from college come in, a fellow preacher. Appreciate Bobby Scrimster and family being with us this morning. I can't remember where you are now, Bobby. Where are you located?
Tulsa,
Oklahoma. So we're good to see him and others that are here from other places. We're so glad to have you with us this morning. I want to mention some things this morning that I hope will help us deal with sin in our lives. And in particular, one element of sin that I hope will be helpful to us as we strive to remove that from our lives. And in particular this morning, I want for us to look at the idea of dealing with habitual sin. Not something that is an occasional problem that we have, and certainly we all sin and fall short of the glory of God. We all transgress the commandment of God. But on an ongoing basis, on a habitual, repeated basis, perhaps there are some things that we do that we struggle with for a very long time. And if you want to overcome that particular sin or that particular element of sin, I think that the things that we'll discuss this morning will help you to overcome that. If you're interested in overcoming that, now it may be that we're not very interested in overcoming that sin, and so these things will not be very helpful. But if you want to overcome habitual sin, I believe that the things that we look at this morning will be helpful to us. Denying our problem will be of no assistance to us. 1 John chapter 1 and verse 8 says that if we say we have no sin, we deceive ourselves and the truth is not in us. So let's turn our attention to that particular element of our lives this morning as we study this idea of sin. You know, sin can certainly be habit forming. We see that in the lives of so very many, in our own lives, in our own experience, that sin can be very habit-forming. That's not something that's unusual to us. Look over at James chapter 1 and verse 21. James chapter 1 and verse 21. And normally when we think of this, maybe we target big sins. Maybe we think of alcoholism or drug abuse or perhaps sexual sin or gambling and things of that kind. But all sin can be habit-forming. And we can get attached to a particular thing, a particular type of sin or an element of sin, and get attached to that and repeat it over and over again. And there was some seeming benefit the first time that caused us to do it the second time. And then the third time, and then to the 100th time, and on and on. And that's just the nature of sin. But James chapter 1 talks about that part of it for us, that he says, therefore lay aside all filthiness and overflow of wickedness, and receive with meekness the implanted word which is able to save your soul. David said that his cup overflowed. And certainly I want that kind of overflow, but not this kind, where there's an overflow of sin in my life. My cup is full and running over, but I hope it's not of that. But maybe in some way it is for us in some way. Colossians chapter 3 and verses 5 through 8 as well point out to us that this is something that we can walk in continually and that we can get attached to. And I know that I sin from time to time, but I hope that I am not walking in it. And that I may occasionally step in the mire and I may step off of the path, but I sure hope that I'm not spending all of my time there. And that becomes something habitual in me to where I'm walking constantly in that circumstance. Colossians 3 and verse 5. Colossians 3 and verse 5 says, therefore put to death your members which are on the earth, fornication, uncleanness, passion, evil desire, and covetousness, which is idolatry. Because of these things, the wrath of God is coming upon the sons of disobedience, in which you yourselves once walked when you lived in them. But now you yourselves are to put off all these: anger, wrath, malice, blasphemy, filthy language out of your mouth. You once walked in this. This was the nature of your lifestyle. But let it not be like that anymore. That was what you were and not what you are. And so we must not continue in sin in that way, in a persistent condition. And he says here in verse 7 that you can live in that. You live in that. And you can live in sin, in adultery. You can live in pornography. You can live in selfishness. You can live in anger, in lies, in thievery, in covetousness. And that can well become a very persistent condition in our lives. In Romans chapter 6 and verse 2, the question is asked, and a question we need to ask ourselves this morning: how shall we, who died to sin, live any longer in it? I think this is a question that's important for us. And the nature of this lesson this morning is vital and important. And if we want to overcome habitual sin, there's some things that we can do to enable ourselves to do that. You know, Ephesians chapter 2, verses 1 through 3 confirm this kind of situation in our lives, where sin can become almost as if it's the natural thing that we do. It's what we tend to turn to. It's a natural response that we have. And it's almost as if it becomes like sleep and eating and all of those things that we do, because it becomes part of our second nature, so to speak. Ephesians chapter 2 and verses 1 through 3 talk about the fact that some, by nature, are children of wrath. Notice what especially verse 3 says. It says, among whom we all once conducted ourselves in the lust of our flesh, fulfilling the desires of the flesh and of the mind, and were by nature children of wrath, just as the others. Now, I don't think that passage is saying to us that it's just something that we're born with and that we can't overcome this, and it's a part of our nature, so to speak. It's inherent and innate to us. But rather, it's just something that we have practiced over and over and over again, and it becomes as if second nature. It's just something that we do. And so I want you to ask yourself this morning, is there something in your life that would truly speak to, and that would describe in you particularly? And Paul says that we ought to come out of that should be something in the past. Isn't it time for you to break the habit that's in your life? And, you know, sin can cause us not to see straight. And perhaps we may, in fact, over time, kind of become accustomed to not seeing the way that we ought to see. In 2 Peter chapter 2 and verse 14, 2 Peter chapter 2 and verse 14, and talking about this context here of false teachers and the influence that they have upon others. He says, having eyes full of adultery and that cannot cease from sin, enticing unstable souls, they have a heart trained in covetous practices and are accursed children. I know some people like that, whose eyes are just full, and we might just fill in the blank with what that is. And here he says they're full of adultery. Who have been trained by that practice over and over again, and it's as if it's just these blinders are on and they can't see anything else. And the reason I know that is because I've been there. And I'm familiar with that condition. And I know how that can fill the mind and the eyes and every part of the being. But it can be overcome. In 2 Peter 2, the same passage here, drop on down a few verses to verse 18. Verse 18 down through verse 22. He says, "For when they speak great swelling words of emptiness, they allure through the lust of the flesh, through lewdness, the ones who have actually escaped from those who live in error. While they promise them liberty, they themselves are slaves of corruption. For by whom a person is overcome, by him also he is brought into bondage. For if after they have escaped the pollutions of the world through the knowledge of the Lord and Savior Jesus Christ, they are again entangled in them." That ought not to describe our condition in Christ. We're not entangled again in sin. "That the latter end is worse for them than the beginning. For it would have been better for them not to have known the way of righteousness than having known it to turn from the holy commandment delivered to them. But it has happened to them according to the true proverb, a dog returns to his own vomit, and a sow having washed to her wallowing in the mire." That must be, folks, something that we cannot do. Let's talk about that a little bit with some practical points, some things that I think will help us in dealing with that. You know, in Romans chapter 7, Paul talks about the problem of sin. Look over to that passage that was read for us there, if you will. And of someone who cannot get a handle upon the problems that he's dealing with, and that the answer can be found in Jesus Christ. In Romans chapter 7 and verse 15, he says, "Has then what is good become death to me? Certainly not. But sin, that it might appear sin, was producing death in me through what is good, so that sin through the commandment might become exceedingly sinful." And he goes on to talk about some of the feelings that he had as you get down a little bit further. Verse 19, "For the good that I will to do, I do not do. For the good that I will to do, I do not do. But the evil I will not to do, that I practice." And that's certainly when he thinks about what can happen, what is able to take place, that was what was taking place. And I think perhaps maybe previously, in particular, obviously, is what he's looking at there. But that sounds like things that we deal with from time to time. Drop down a little bit further into verse 24 and 25. "O wretched man that I am, who will deliver me from this body of death?" And of course, Jesus had already done that for Paul. "I thank God through Jesus Christ our Lord. So then, with the mind I serve the law of God, but with the flesh the law of sin." It is possible. And Paul goes on as he displays in his own life and as he writes to people in these letters and the work that he does, that yes, sin can be overcome. I think the first thing that we need to do, what do I do? There is a better way. The very first thing that we need to do is to pray to God. And we need to do that with energy. We need to do that understanding the vital nature of what it is that we're doing. That is with energy, that it is boiling over in us. James chapter 5 and verse 16. that it is effectual. And the word there carries the idea of energy. This is something that it's going to take, folks. If it's something that is persistent, it's going to take some effort to overcome it. It's going to take some energy on our part. In the very first place, that we ought to start is with our God. And the relationship that we have with Him and the conversations that we have with Him. And we're going to pray to Him energetically and expand upon our problems in our prayers and make this the very first priority in our life. It's the center point if we're going to have success. That we pray for the strength that God can provide to us. You know, you've been trying it the other way for a long time. You've been trying to do it yourself for a long time. And it hasn't worked. And maybe you've turned to one thing or the other, and you've been dependent on your own strength. And you better, if that's the case, change your tactics because it's not working. And you better turn to God for what He can do in your life. And it's not me first and God second, or a counselor first and God second, or a self-help book and God second. It's God first and everything else second or third or fourth. But this is something that ought to be done energetically. And let me encourage you, when you pray to God, that you're specific in your request. That you tell Him just exactly what it is that you're struggling with. And that you speak those words, not because He doesn't know them, but because you need to say them. And you need to be specific about those things. And to pray that you will not enter into temptation in those particular things. Jesus said in Matthew 26 and verse 41, "Watch and pray lest you enter into temptation. The spirit indeed is willing, but the flesh is weak." Pray to God. Start there if you've got a habitual sin that you're dealing with. Prayer is potent. It is powerful. And denying oneself is involved in that. And let me tell you another thing. It's awfully hard to sin when you're praying to God, when you're on your knees and you're speaking to Him. Pray. Start there. Well, there's a number of other things that we need to do in order to become this sin. Number one, or number two, overcome evil with good. I think this is a key part of success when it comes to dealing with these kind of things. And that is that this is something that's going to be purposeful. It's going to be something that is deliberate. And it's substituting, it is taking the place of what it is that we're struggling with. You're doing something wrong and doing something evil, overcome that with good. Look at Romans 12 and verse 21. Romans 12 and verse 21. At the very moment in which enters into our mind to do that thing that we have been struggling with, to redirect that energy to doing something right, something positive, something good, something that might be lasting in significance, maybe for another person. And here Paul says, do not be overcome by evil, but overcome evil with good. That's pretty simple. Don't let evil overcome you. You overcome that with good. I think that's a very practical thing. If we can convince ourselves that when we have that thought to enter into that sin with which we have been beset for a long time, to do something good, maybe to reach out to somebody else, maybe to do something good for them, to take out our Bible, to say that prayer that we have needed to pray. Take that thing and squeeze it out of your life with what is good. Get out your Bible class material that you haven't prepared for Sunday or Wednesday, and when that sin comes upon you and that temptation comes, why not take that and make that the focus? And overcome evil with good. Look over at Galatians 5 and verse 16. This is very profound, isn't it? But this is what the Scriptures speak of. And here, look at Galatians chapter 5 and verse 16. You know, complex problems oftentimes have very simple solutions. And I think that's the case. In particular, with some of the sin with which we struggle with. And he says here in verse 16 of Galatians chapter 5, I say then, walk in the Spirit, and you shall not fulfill the lust of the flesh. Get to something good quickly. Every moment that you delay in making that decision, every moment that you ponder what it is that you're struggling with and you don't get to something good, the probabilities exponentially increase that you will continue in. Walk in the Spirit, and you will not fulfill the lust of the flesh. And do that now. Hebrews chapter 3 and verse 13 points to that idea of something that is done daily, exhorting one another daily, the things that we do on a daily basis. Overcome evil thoughts with good. Replace that. Philippians chapter 4 and verse 8. Think on these things. Things are good. Just things. Holy things. Those things. Psalm 119 verse 11 says, your word I have hidden in my heart that I might not sin against you. Romans says, make no provision for sin. Ephesians says, do not give place to the devil. You've got to substitute. You've got to overcome evil with good. And then thirdly, find someone that you can talk to about it. Find someone that's an ally, that has the same goal as you, and ultimately isn't that to go to heaven? Find someone that you can trust. And nobody can help if nobody knows the problem. Look over at James 5 and verse 16. Over in James 5 again. And that's going to be a difficult thing to do. And the reason it's difficult is because the devil always speaks into our ear saying, nobody knows about this except me and you. Your spouse doesn't know. Your children don't know. Your friends don't know. Only I know. And that's what the wicked one speaks to us in that way. But know assuredly that God knows it. And that He has said to us that this is the way that we can deal with this. And we can't drive this home enough. Ask someone to help you. To have accountability to someone else. James 5 verse 16, confess your trespasses to one another and pray for one another that you may be healed. The effective, fervent prayer of a righteous man avails much. I don't know that I watched it more than once. There was a show that caught my eye one time on television, and it was called The Failure Club. And it was, I think it was put out by Morgan Spurlock, if that name sounds familiar to any of you. And the basic premise of what his show was is watching people that wanted to begin a new career. And so they were willing to give up everything that they had for this new career. And they would meet on a regular basis to talk about their failures. And so they would come together and they would talk about that I tried to do this and it just didn't work. And this was a regular occurrence for these folks. And the show goes for about a year and they watch these people and what happens with them and how their failures, they were willing to talk about those things, and oftentimes, as a group, they were able to overcome those things. I am part of the failure club. And we need to talk about those things from time to time. And I imagine you're part of that club too. We need to find an ally. We need to speak to somebody about what it is that's just destroying us. If we have something like that in our lives, to admit that I'm not perfect, to admit that I need help, to admit that I have a habit of sin, and to say, Lord, help me. Brother, help me. Sister, help me with this. There's no shame in that. because we're all a part of the failure club. And so let's talk to one another about those things, encouraging one another. Number four, we need to make sin inaccessible. I've found that for me, this is probably the one part of all of these things, or at least one of the parts that's most important for me, and that is to reduce access to the thing. And to reduce the accessibility that I have to that. And you do that by planning. You do that by scanning the horizon and looking at and seeing if there's something out there that's coming my way or that I'm headed toward that could potentially produce a serious problem for me. And so you scan and you predict. You know, that's not hard because we've done the same thing 100 times. And we've made the same mistake in this sin this many times, and we know what it is that produces it, and so we predict. If I do this, then that will lead to this. It's simple. And so if that's the case, then we turn and we flee from that thing. That's a skill that we need to develop. One of the things that I love about soccer, that's kind of my sport. I love soccer, played soccer, coached soccer. And the best soccer players are not always the best athletes. A lot of times, they're the ones that do that. They scan. They predict. They think about where that ball could end up and what might happen, and they put themselves in that position, and inevitably, that's where the opportunity comes. And I think there's probably a lot of sports like that. But we're going to anticipate the sin beforehand and make it inaccessible. And you know, Jesus talks about that in very strong terms to us. And He says, you do whatever is necessary in order to accomplish that. If your right hand causes you to sin, you cut that off. Or if your eye does, then you pluck it out. And I don't know how He could say that in much stronger terms. To make that sin inaccessible. And to do whatever is necessary in order to get that done. And folks, you can't do that. This is not a hydrogen peroxide kind of problem. You know, that's kind of the answer for everything. Just put hydrogen peroxide on it. It'll take care of it. Or put a Band-Aid on it. Sometimes it's going to take some major surgery for us to be successful. And I don't know if you have a sin like this that is habitual in nature, then you better dig deep and take some very active and energetic steps to deal with that. And sometimes the process is not very, very pleasant. It hurts to have to talk to somebody about these things. That's not an easy thing to admit. Or to come forward before a group of people and say, brethren, I've sinned, and I need your help. I have done wrong. That's not an easy thing to do. And so you do that sometimes by just simply running away. How do you do that? One way is to flee sexual immorality. 1 Corinthians chapter 6 and verse 18. To flee youthful lust. And you could go down the line sometimes. Sometimes it's like Joseph, and you've got to leave your cloak in the hand of the wicked one and the influencer and get out. And that's not easy. And it might expose your nakedness from time to time. But we need to be of the sort that's willing to accept that kind of shame, if there is some involved, for the salvation of our souls. Scan the horizon, predict where there is a pit, and watch out for that. And go around it. Turn and flee. Folks, take one day at a time. Supposedly, it takes 2 weeks to develop a habit. I think that's probably pretty true from my experience. But I know one thing, that it takes a lot longer time to break it. It's a lot harder to break a habit, I think, than it is to develop it. And so this might take some time for you, and it may not be automatic. But let me encourage you to take one day at a time. Look over at Matthew 6 and verse 34, just very quickly, and the lesson will be yours momentarily. You know, I think that a lot of times we apply this, and certainly we should, in terms of maybe worry and anxiety and things in our life that come our way. But I think that there's some real application when it comes to that principle of not being consumed about tomorrow in relation to the things with which we are struggling. You know, a lot of times we just get overwhelmed in thinking about, I can't keep this up for a year. I can't keep this up for the rest of my life. How can I do that? Well, you don't have to do that. You just have to do it today. And a lot of times we talk ourselves out of progress spiritually for that very reason. Sometimes we talk ourselves out of obedience to the Lord for this very reason. I don't know if I can live the Christian life. I don't know that I can do that and continue to do that day after day. Well, just be concerned about today. And then when that 24-hour clock turns again, you just worry about today. You be righteous one day at a time. Matthew chapter 6 and verse 34. He says, therefore, do not worry about tomorrow, for tomorrow will worry about its own things. Sufficient for the day is its own trouble. If I think about all the troubles of tomorrow and next week and next year and all of that, I might be convinced not to do anything today. So take one day at a time. We need to be reminded of these things, and I hope that this might help you in terms of these things in your life. Maybe there's somebody here this morning that has been struggling in some way with the sin of this kind. Maybe it's a situation that you need to be made, or that is a public sin in some way, or you just need the prayers of this congregation. Do that today. Make your life right before God today. And you can overcome these things. The question was asked of Jesus, who then can be saved? Jesus looked at them and said, with men it is impossible, but not with God. For with God all things are possible. Come to Christ, depend on Him, and He can make you whole. If there is someone that has need this morning, won't you come while we stand?